and welcome to the Bucket Lister podcast. Join your host, Keith Crockford, along with special guests who have traveled the world, here to share stories of their adventures and plenty of inspo to add to your bucket list. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bucket Lister podcast. I am your host, Keith Crockford, and today I am chatting with Jake Field. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Keith.
Nice to have you back on the podcast again.
It's nice to be back. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it has been a while. And this, I cannot believe I'm saying this, but this is episode 52 of the podcast.
That is crazy. I remember when you started doing it, when we started speaking about it. Has it really been 52 already?
52, yeah. One a week. I've done one every week on a
comeback. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but can we have a big, big celebration if we get to 100?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me to do that, something that consistently is going to be... But yeah, we've managed to get one out every week on a Wednesday for a whole year. And this is going to... I've decided to celebrate this, that this is going to be the end of season one. Next week will be the start of season two of the Bucket Lister.
Oh, I'm seeing movie trailers. I'm seeing next season on the Bucket Lister podcast.
Yeah, coming
soon. With Keith Crockford. Oh, you could have a little like show reel for all of the individuals coming on as well, like a little snapshot. Oh, got big plans.
Big plans for it. Season two. Hopefully we can continue on, because sometimes you get season one that's brilliant and then season two was a bit of a letdown. So I think, you know.
Well, the sweet spot is, and this is a Gareth reference, 6 seasons in a movie. That's the sweet spot.
That's the sweet spot, is it? That's a long.
See if anyone gets the reference.
That's a lot of podcasts.
There's a lot of podcasts.
If we get to the end of 6 seasons, if I've got enough topics to keep me going for 6 seasons, that would be.
I don't know if we find each other interesting enough to do 6 seasons, let alone everybody else finding us interesting enough to listen to.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think that people are going to really find it that. That interesting after 6 seasons of us talking about the same places, but we are adding new destinations.
We've got new trips,
which means it does give me something new to be talking about. And we've got some good episodes lined up coming up as well. So apologies for this next one, but you know, season two is going to be better than the end of season one. So.
We're really ending it on a high. Sorry, guys. That's it. But you know, sorry about this one. But next one's going to be great.
Don't give up on us this week. But we have been going for 52 episodes. And I think that, you know, I do deserve a pat on the back for myself for that one, because I don't think I've ever been consistent about something as much as I have been with this podcast. So, and today...
Very well done.
Today we are going to be talking about the Lara. No, not the Lares Trek.
No, steady on.
We're going to be talking about the Inca Trail trek to Machu Picchu. And if any of you can remember way back to episode 7 of the Bucket Lister podcast, I was chatting with Dave about which trek to Machu Picchu. So we kind of on that episode discussed all of the different treks. But
have you done me over? Have you got notes in front of you? Episode 7. Are you referencing?
Yeah. I'm getting better at this podcast in malarkey, and I'm actually doing some preparation before the podcast now. They're not like the start where they were just completely off the cuff. Like there's some work that now goes into these podcasts.
Wow.
Like I'm a changed man. Like, so my point being is, if you want to head back and listen to all the way back to August, 2022 and go to episode 7.
Yeah.
Dave and I were discussing Machu Picchu and which trek to get you there. But today I've got Jake on with me because we're going to go a bit more in depth into the Inca Trail because Jake has just got back. So it's fresh in his mind and we can go through it in some detail. So the Inca Trail is the popular one, isn't it? That is the one that, I mean, if you look at how many trips at the Bucket List Company we sell to Machu Picchu, the majority of them are on an Inca Trail trek. Yeah. And I think that's because the Inca Trail is iconic. It's the one people know about, and it's the one people believe they need to go and do. I'm going to refrain from my comments on that one because, like, I don't agree with that. But I still think the Inca Trail is special. But for me, I like to be around not a lot of people, and I find that the Inca Trail is getting to the point of over tourism in terms of it, because that is the one that everyone wants to go and do. And, you know, I think it's important to say to people that, you know, on a day there are 200 available permits for the Inca Trail, and there are 300 permits for staff. So every day there could be up to 500 people trekking along the Inca Trail, and it is one trail along the way.
Now, see, the thing is, I haven't done the Salkantay and I haven't done the Lares, so I'm aware that this is an opinion that is coming solely from having done the Inca Trail, but I am going to have to argue some of those points, because yes, there's quite a lot of permits and things like that, but I think that there's so many factors of the Inca Trail that outweigh, you know, the potential con of bumping into a few more people, but I'm sure we'll go into those as we go throughout the episode.
And I mean, I think the other misconception as well is there are thousands of miles of Inca Trail across South America. It's not just in Peru. You know, the Incas had the whole of South America. You know, if you're on the Salkantay trek, you're on the Lares trek, you are still walking on old Inca trails that were there. So it's not, you know, the term the Inca Trail, it's the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. And now
100%. Yeah, it's not like doing the Great Wall of China where you would, you know, I mean, obviously you get to experience a section of it, so I suppose it is. But, you know, it's not like when people do the whole Great Wall of China, you know, we are just focusing on a specific part. I'm sure if you wanted to go out and do the, you know, all of the Inca Trail, then be my guest. I don't know how long that would take you. But yeah, we are just focusing on a relatively small section, but quite a significant section historically. And I think that's a big thing. If you like your culture, if you like your history, if you've read up about the Incas and the Spanish and all of that, then this is the trek for you, because you do get to experience that pilgrimage and you are walking in the footsteps that they would have taken to get to Machu Picchu annually. And that's quite something.
And let's be clear about this as well. Like, that trek, the Inca Trail trek, is the only trek where you can trek into Machu Picchu itself. All of the other treks finish in Ollantaytambo, you get the train to Aguascalientes, and then you will still get to go and see, or you trek into Aguascalientes from the Salkantay trek. You don't get the experience on any other trek apart from the Inca Trail trek of trekking through the Sun Gate and into Machu Picchu.
That was a huge appeal to me, the fact that it is the only trek that you get to drop into Machu Picchu, you hike into Machu Picchu. And I think, you know, that in itself outweighs so many of the cons that might have been around how many people they are. I suppose one of the things that I think was really lovely was being able to drop into Machu Picchu, you've hiked into it, you've done the journey that so many of the Inca would have done, and you feel like you've completed it as well. That's the other thing, because you do finish in the middle of Machu Picchu. The other routes, you'll finish, like you say, in the town nearby, and then you'll get the bus up in the morning. Well, I would argue that that's when you're surrounded by the most tourists anyway, was when you're getting the bus up. Whereas, although we had a few people on that route, when we dropped into Machu Picchu, the advantage of doing the Inca Trail, or one of the advantages as well, is that we had a completely private viewing platform of Machu Picchu that you can't get access to if you do the other routes, really. So they only kind of reserve that for people who are coming off the Inca Trail. So
you can trek up to the Sun Gate, but it would be hell of a trek. But there is now talk as well that actually that's going to be an additional paid for service, that you won't be able to go up to there unless you paid for it.
And that was an incredible, I mean, yeah, it was an amazing view. It was absolutely incredible.
I mean, I think where I will argue with you on that point is obviously I did the Lares trek in May, and yes, we had the first bus up and we were one of the first people to get into Machu Picchu. And I have a video of Machu Picchu without a person in it, which is obviously very rare to be able to get a photo or a video of having nobody down in Machu Picchu itself, which obviously you wouldn't, because obviously you can only come through the Sun Gate at the same time as visitors are let into Machu Picchu from the buses. So,
yeah, we're never going to be earlier than the first bus. And in fairness, I think, you know, for people who are listening that are looking at doing the Inca Trail and potentially wondering, well, why don't we just get up a little bit earlier on that day and kind of beat the rush, if you like. Well, what happens is when you're at the final campsite, you get up around 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the morning. You'll have some food. Your porters and your guide team will then start packing everything down around you, because they're actually then racing to go and catch this train that is set, you know, that is put on specifically for the guiding team. What you then do is you go down to the exit of that campsite, and you have to wait until first light. So the gates are shut and somebody is making sure that you don't set off until first light, until it's safe to do so. And what that means is that realistically, you're not going to be getting into Machu Picchu until about 8 o'clock in the morning at the earliest, I would say. So you have had a couple of buses of people, but
quite a lot of buses.
All right. Quite a lot of buses. But you get that moment at the Sun Gate where it is just people who have been hiking the Inca Trail. There's a separate platform as well, which they reserve for the Inca group, and it's a little bit closer. I kind of think that, you know, once you're there, you've trekked into it, you get a bit of time to enjoy the day, then you go on a tour. But, so,
you know, I remember every time that I've done the Inca Trail, I remember walking down from the Sun Gate and you see you haven't had a shower for 4 days and, you know, you're carrying your day pack and you're walking down.
All right, stop calling me out.
I remember like walking past all the tourists who have just got the train there and haven't done any trekking at all. And you feel like, I've earned my right to be here.
That is something that I was going to mention, is that there is an element of feeling really smug. Yeah. And I think, you know, you can't replicate that. Even though the Lares and the Sol Conte, you will finish the day before and you will get on that bus and you have earned your right. You know, you've done the hike, you've done the trek. The difference is, yeah, there is almost an element of kind of smugness and pride of coming down from the Sun Gate. And yeah, you are in your trekking kit. And it's really obvious, because you've been surrounded by people who have got hiking bags, big boots, might not have showered in 4 days, won't have showered in 4 days. And then suddenly you're around people who are in colourful ponchos, big hats, doing Instagram reels. It becomes that quite classic, you know, travel influencer type of vibe. In some way, not everybody's like that. Some people are coming up.
The term we use is travel wonker.
There you go. So you are surrounded by travel wankers. There you go. Yeah. That is the easiest way to put it. And you kind of look at it, you do feel a little bit smug, because people are looking at you, and in my head they're looking at you thinking, wow, those people have just hiked from up there, they're so hardcore, that's amazing. Realistically, they're looking at you and going, what bush did you just crawl out of and why do you smell so bad?
And I think, you know, if you are listening to this podcast because you are thinking of doing the Inca Trail trek, like so many people like end up in Cusco, like, you know, as part of their traveling. And what I would say to you is because there are only 200 permits available per day, those permits sell out very, very quickly. So if you are thinking of turning up in Peru and going and doing an Inca Trail trek, then please just bear in mind that you need to get that booked in as early as you possibly can. Don't expect to rock up in Cusco thinking you're going to be able to go and do an Inca Trail trek, because the chances are there won't be any permits and you're going to end up on one of the other two treks or one of the other three treks if you want to go into it.
The big thing with last minute bookings is what campsites they have available. Now, I know that there's, you know, there is talk of how much, you know, how populated the Inca Trail is. And then you kind of, when you're hiking on the trail, I mean, I will argue that we didn't actually see very many people day to day. We might have just got incredibly lucky, but we didn't really see anybody else. And you would imagine that the campsites are going to be these melting pots. So that's where everybody is, almost like a choke point. That's where everyone's going to be congregating. But the campsites, the pitches are so spread out, in my opinion, that they are actually quite spread out. And when we were sat in our camp, wouldn't really have known that anybody else was anywhere near you. It felt like we were just private camping on the side. And it was, yeah, it was really nice.
And the great thing about the Inca Trail is a lot of the locals on the Inca Trail will come in, supply you with goods in the evening, yes. i.e. you can buy a beer, you can buy a Coke, you can buy a chocolate bar. Like those services aren't available on the other treks. So, you know, it is quite nice when you get into camp and they've got an Inca Cola there and that you're like, oh, I could really just do with an Inca Cola now and have that option. So I think that is one massive positive with having the multiple campsites is because they have those campsites, it does mean that it provides the locals with a way of coming and supplying you and giving you and you know, allowing them to earn some money as well, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I suppose if you relate it back to an Everest Base Camp trip compared to a Kilimanjaro trip, yeah, those are ones that we talk about quite often, but Everest Base Camp is quite well supplied. You know, you have the ability to buy snacks and things the whole way out. Kilimanjaro is a little bit more remote. I don't know what it's like on the Sol Kinteh, for instance, but I know that, as you said, the Inca, you do have those options of kind of supplying yourself as you go, which just takes a little bit of weight off to know, okay, well, I can grab a chocolate bar on day three if I really need it or whatever it might be.
Oh, it's supply and demand, isn't it? Like, you know, yeah. When I was on the Lares trek, we were the only trekkers that were there. So nobody's going to sit out there on the hope that somebody is going to walk past that they can sell a beer to them. Whereas on the Inca Trail trek, they know that every day at those fixed campsites, there are always going to be trekkers walking past who probably after a day's trekking are going to want a beer or they're going to want a bottle of Coke or they're going to want a chocolate bar or something. So they know that absolutely. They can sell it at that point. So I think if we look at, you know, obviously most people are going to start their trip in Lima, whether or not you are doing a South American tour or you are just doing a trip to go and do the Inca Trail, the chances are you are going to be flying into Lima at some point. Lima is at sea level. Lima is generally always cloudy and has a haze and a fog over it. You'll probably spend a couple of days in Lima before you jump on another plane and head to Cusco. Now, I always remember a couple of years ago, someone commented on one of my Facebook posts or the bucket list based Facebook posts about how expensive our trips were. And when we got down to the nitty gritty of it, he had taken the 24-hour bus from Lima to Cusco. And obviously he'd, you know, stayed in a hostel and he had done all that, which is fine. Because he was traveling South America and he wanted to save some money. Whereas when we run our trips, we run our trip in 11 days. And a lot of our clients don't want to be sat on a coach for 24 hours or they don't want to be staying in a hostel. So our trips are slightly different in terms of that. So we do take the plane from Lima to Cusco, which is about an hour and 15 minutes, isn't it? And it's a pretty stunning plane journey. If you get a window seat, you get some really good views over the Andes as you're flying in. But obviously the biggest thing you'll notice when you land in Cusco is the fact that you land at 3,300 meters and you've come from sea level an hour and 15 minutes ago. So just to explain how what that feels like when you get off the aeroplane.
So I suppose, anytime you go to altitude, it is a little bit of a weird feeling. And I think mainly because you start feeling the effects, but you can't this might sound silly, but you can't see altitude, and that's quite hard to wrap your head around. So you feel, or you know, everything that you're looking at looks like it would at sea level, obviously. So you're sort of behaving as you would. But when you get off the plane, you don't notice it straight away. But about 5 minutes later, after you've been walking around, you might be getting a little bit out of breath quicker than you normally would. One person in my group just said that they started to come down with it 5 minutes later, a bit of a headache, and just felt slightly hungover, I think was the best way to describe it. So what we then do is you meet our driver and we get taken to the hotel in Cusco. And then what I say to everybody is just chill out. Don't rush around anywhere. There is no rush. Just have a really relaxed afternoon. We'll go grab some food. And by the next morning, your body has had time to acclimatize to that altitude. Yeah, I mean, to put it into perspective, you're going, what is it, almost three times higher than Ben Nevis in the space of an hour, and you don't feel it because you're sat on a plane. So it's not like you've had that time to hike up and acclimatize. But yeah, the best thing you can do is relax, take on lots of water, eat some good food, but nothing too difficult to process, and get an early night and get some good sleep, which won't be too difficult because the time difference. So you'll be feeling pretty tired anyway. And then the next day we include a tour. So that's a great way for people to start moving, start exercising. I do say that on day two, you don't want to, you know, even if you do feel a little bit rough, don't spend the whole day in bed. The best thing to do is actually start exercising and moving around. And then after that, we begin the Inca Trail, where we actually drop in altitude. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely. And Cusco is... I think Cusco must be one of my favorite cities in the world. I think I just absolutely love spending time in Cusco.
So incredible.
I never get bored in Cusco. And obviously what you've got to think about in like Lima is quite a humid climate. Whereas when you get to Cusco, you might still have warm days, but the nights are certainly going to get cold when you're at that sort of altitude. So, you know, make sure that, you know, I know people have fallen foul of it before where they've gone out in the evening, you know, early evening for a meal when they've been out for a couple of hours and they've come out and all of a sudden the temperature's dropped and it's now sort of 2 or 3 degrees compared to it was like 18, 19 degrees during the day. So it can make a...
Yeah, it drops quick. I think that's the other thing. So we all got slightly sunburnt. I say slightly. Got sunburnt in Cusco walking around doing the tour. And then by the night time, you're sort of putting your down jacket on. Walking around. I mean, nothing compared to the people that live there. You know, we'd be walking around in a t-shirt, a light down jacket. They were hats, gloves, scarves, everything. Yeah,
yeah. The thing that surprises most people about Cusco is how much stuff it has there. Like, you know,
There's always things going on in Cusco. That's something that I didn't realize. There's always something happening. You know, we got there was a big, the Interrimi, I think it was called, which is a big festival. And they were all practicing and rehearsing for that. So just from the time we were there to the time we left, and then even when we came back after the trek, everything was happening. It was busy. It was colorful. But yeah, you've got loads of restaurants. You got a few bars. Like there's so much that you can go and do. And then we do the tour into the surrounding areas.
You should go to the Pisco Museum, which isn't actually a museum. It is a bar, but obviously that's a really good museum to go and visit.
Is that what you tell people? You go, we're going to go on a museum tour and you end up at a bar.
It's called the Pisco Museum. So obviously, you know, people want to study and be educated, and I'm always happy to go and be the tour guide that educates them.
What have you learned about Pisco Sours? Because obviously anybody who's listening who's thinking about going to Peru, whether you do the Inca Trail, the Lares, the Salcante, whatever it might be, Pisco Sours is obviously like the national drink. And it's something that I do recommend. If you do drink, that is something that you should go and try. There's nothing quite like it. What do you get on this museum tour?
There's no museum tour. It's you sit at a table and they bring over a big menu full of different drinks that have Pisco in them and you can...
Right.
You can go through them. I mean, they've got some pictures on the wall of like Pisco from the times in whatever. So you probably could learn
Pisco throughout the ages. Is that what we're...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, there's the whole big thing between Peru and Chile of who actually invented Pisco. And yeah. The Peruvians claim it's there and the Chileans claim it's theirs, but I think it's been decided.
I think that was something that I wasn't quite aware of, how much cultural controversy there was about things. I mean, we were kind of getting into who landed on Easter Island first between Chile and Peru. Like, I didn't realize that was still being
debated. According
to Peru, it's not a debate. It was definitely them, but yeah.
Yeah. But that's the same as Pisco. It's a bit like who invented the pasty. Was it Devon or was it Cornwall? It's a very similar sort of.
Ooh, I'm guessing you're Team Devon.
Team Devon all the way, yeah. Although
it's a Cornish pasty.
Although I eat my scone the Cornish way, not the English way. So talk us through the Inca Trail then. So it's basically.
Leave
Cusco, you're going to get on a bus. Like, although it's described the Inca Trail as a 4-day trek, in essence, it's only realistically a 3-day trek because you don't start until lunchtime on day one. And obviously, day four is your tour of Machu Picchu, isn't it? So you've really only got 2.5 days trekking to get to the end point, and then your final day is Machu Picchu. So just walk us through the trek itself.
Yeah, so we get on the bus from Cusco, got a couple of hours. We do leave quite early in the morning, but to be fair, people just tend to sleep on the bus. And we do stop off on the way for breakfast, which is brilliant. We then get to the start point, the main start point. Everybody's sorting out kit. The guys are handing you snacks, so you just get loaded up. Once you're all ready, you start hiking. The trail is... you know, it's a nice introduction. It's relatively flat. You cross over the river. You start just following the river all the way up. And that's a really nice introduction to the Inca Trail. It does get steeper towards the second half of the day. And that's where you're going up to your first campsite. That's kind of your first taste of what your camp life is going to be. I mean, they do such an incredible job. The you have this big kind of mess tent where everybody will sit around a table and you get hot drinks, biscuits. They'll then bring out your meal. So they tend to have a starter and then a main course. And then sometimes they'll do a pudding or, you know, not do a starter and they'll do a pudding or vice versa. But that's kind of the big communal area. You've got your sleeping tents, which are some of the biggest tents actually that I've ever slept in. Kind of on these trips, they're really spacious, they're really nice.
The nice thing about the tents that they use over there, I mean, or the, you know, the that our provider uses for us,
yeah,
is how tall the tents are. Like, you could, yeah. You know, I mean, like me or you wouldn't be able to stand up in one, it's 6 foot plus, but like you've got plenty of space to get changed in them. You certainly don't feel cramped in those tents, do you?
No, you definitely don't feel cramped, and that makes a big difference. So that's kind of the end of your first day. It's a nice introduction, flat at the beginning, a little bit steeper in the afternoon. And then day two is what is generally considered to be the toughest day on the Inca Trail. And that is where you go over what's called the Dead Woman's Pass. Now, despite rumors and people all wondering why it's called the Dead Woman's Pass, it's not because anybody that I'm aware of has died up there. It's because when you look up at the top of the pass and you see it from a certain angle, it looks like a woman lying on her back. And that's kind of where the name came from. But that's going to take you to your high point. So you do have a lot of ascent straight after breakfast and then pretty much all the way through until the midday where you drop back down again. And that's going to take you up to about 4,000 meters.
And that's the highest point on the trek, isn't it?
That's the highest point on the trek. So you get to the highest point on day two. So it's, you know, you've had time to acclimatize as you're walking up. But the highest point on the trek is 4,000 meters. You reach that halfway through day two. Then you drop down. You've got quite a steep descent into your camp in the evening. That's generally considered to be the hardest day. Some people,
I think the reason why it's considered the hardest day is because of the amount of steps that day.
So it's a lot of steps. But it's also a lot of steps coming down because you get to 4,000 and then you drop all the way back down again. So there is a steep descent, and you know, lots of people will struggle more with the uphill. Lots of people struggle more with the downhill. So it depends what suits you. day two does have both. But
I mean, a lot of people, but I suppose my point being there is if you are someone that has knee problems, for example, like the Inca Trail could be quite tough on you in terms of the amount of steps that are there.
Yeah, you are going to want trekking poles. I've started wearing some like just knee supports, just kind of helping out on those sections. But I was pleasantly surprised. They did, you know, it was said that that's the hardest day. I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't think it was too bad, actually. So that was really nice. It is still a really enjoyable trek. The views were incredible. And I didn't find it as challenging as I was expecting. And then day three is really kind of your final full day of the trek, and you're going to go up again. And then you go down they call it the Gringo Killers, which is a long section of downhill, mainly steps. And that is something that your knees kind of take a little bit of a beating on that. But something that you get on all of the days of the trip, which I failed to mention, is that you are always stopping and you're looking at these different Inca sites. Now, one of the things that I had in my mind before I came out was Machu Picchu is when we'll get to see the Inca ruin. As you get to see Machu Picchu, that's kind of quite big. But what I hadn't taken into account, and one of the reasons why the Inca Trail is my favorite, is you get so much history and so much culture every single day leading up to it. And I'm not saying that Machu Picchu is a disappointment or a letdown or an anticlimax or anything, because it isn't. But you've seen so many old settlements, you've seen so many ruins, you've been told the stories about them, you're walking in the footsteps, you're doing that pilgrimage, that by the time you get to Machu Picchu, you feel like you've done the whole journey, and you have a lot more knowledge about those ruins and the site. So the day three, you go down the Gringo Killers, so big, long downhill section. And then very, very quickly then, the last day, which is technically day four, only a couple of hours. You're up quite early. You're waiting for that gate to be opened, waiting for it to be safe for you to go on the trail. You're only doing a couple of hours. Your last kind of big hurdle is what they call the monkey steps. And that is not super long. It's quite a short section of steps, but it's incredible. It's so steep that you have to use your hands as well to sort of support you. Everyone's taking pictures. Everyone's having a good laugh while you're going up there. I mean, it is quite steep, so you have a good laugh when you're at the top and you caught your breath back. And then you go up to the Sun Gate, and the Sun Gate is the first point that you will view Machu Picchu. And that is really something that you only get when you do the Inca Trail. And from there, you drop in. You get there about 8-9 o'clock in the morning, and the rest of the day is touring Machu Picchu and traveling back to Cusco.
And just to clear this one up, because when you get into Machu Picchu, you then have to go out of Machu Picchu, don't you? Because you're not allowed to have your bags in Machu Picchu. So you need to go out. You then need to pay to store your bags. And then you then go back into Machu Picchu for your tour, don't you?
Yeah, so we were told, I mean, a couple of us got away with carrying our backpacks in Machu Picchu because they were quite a small size. But what they're really strict on is big bags. So if you do have big trekking bags, they are going to ask you to store them. I think it was like one or two. It was only a few sol, or basically that it ends up being. So it's not very expensive. And quite a lot of people, after you've been hiking for that length of time anyway, that 4 days, it's really nice to be able to take your bag off and just wander around and take in Machu Picchu. So yeah, that's kind of like a whistle-stop tour of the Inca Trail. But the main highlights are definitely the views, the history, and the culture. And there's something really cool about looking down at the path, all of these cobbled stones, and knowing that that's exactly what was placed by the Inca all those thousands of years ago, and it hasn't changed.
Just quickly, Jake, just explain as well, like, because obviously one, your kit is carried by a porter, but you have a very small baggage limit, don't you? And some people decide not to use porters. As a company, we do use porters. And then for our guides over there. They will provide us with a duffel bag that we can then decant our stuff in that the porters are going to carry. Just explain that process in what you need to actually pack in that bag.
Yeah, so as you said, you'll get to carry your day pack with your kind of immediate things that you're going to need, your personal belongings that you want to have with you on the trek. And then there will be a small duffel bag that is going to get carried by that guiding team. Now, a lot is supplied for you. So you have 7 kilogram weight allowance in your duffel bag. But I really don't think that that's a hard number to hit, because day to day, you're going to be wearing your boots. They're quite heavy. You're going to be wearing most of your hiking clothes. In your day pack, you're going to have your waterproofs and a first aid kit, and then your water and some snacks. So all that you're going to need to carry in your duffel bag is spare tops, maybe an extra layer, like a warmer layer, that type of thing. Your sleeping bag. So you'll need to take your sleeping bag. They do provide you on this trip with a roll mat. So that isn't something that you need to take with you.
Our provider provides you with a roll mat.
Sorry, of course. Yeah, our provider provides you with a roll mat, but double check. So you can take your own. If you want to, you can take like an inflatable mat. But like I say, the ones that we get provided with, I've always found to be comfortable enough. What else would I have in my duffel bag? Not a lot really, just spare clothes, sleeping bag. I carry my first aid kit. I carry my head torch. And I think as long as you kind of resign yourself to the fact that there aren't really showers. There was one campsite that we stayed at that did have a shower, but it was freezing cold, and it was already quite cold in the evening anyway. So nobody really went for it. But yeah, you can get away with packing a lot less than you think.
And again, our team come out and bring out hot water in the mornings for you to water. They bring mm-hmm. you a bowl of water to your tent in the morning. As soon as you get into camp, they bring you another bowl of hot water as well. So like you've got, you know, so a basic wash bag, you know, a couple of changes of clothes, and that's pretty much all you need in that 7 kilos with your sleeping bag, isn't it?
It's all you need. Yeah. You really don't need as much as you think you do.
So then once you've finished your tour of Machu Picchu, 2.5-3 hours is what you get in Machu Picchu, pretty much is enough to get you round it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what we found was because we'd had all of the stories leading up to Machu Picchu of the Inca, and we, you know, the way that our provider did it was that we basically got a big long story over those 4 days of the Inca civilization, and that kind of culminated when we got to Machu Picchu and almost ended. But what that meant was when we were walking past other groups, they were getting a lot of information thrown at them really, really quickly, whereas we'd had all of that information spread out over 4 days. So when we got to Machu Picchu, we got quite a lot of time to really take it all in, ask specific questions. It wasn't rushed, you know, and it was almost a case of going, okay, is everyone happy with this section? We'll move on. So yeah, we didn't hang around for too long. We kind of made the most of it, and then came back. There's a little cafe outside Machu Picchu. You can grab a coffee and a sandwich and things like that. And then we jumped back on. Well, we got the bus down to, I'm going to say it wrong, Aguas Calientes. And we then got the chance to go out for lunch. So we all went out for lunch as a group. And then we got the train. So we got the train majority of the way. And that's quite a cool experience in itself, actually. And one of the things that I like about doing the Inca Trail or those trails is that you get to experience the hiking as well as the train journey. Because for a lot of people, that train journey will be one of their bucket list, you know, something they want to tick off their bucket list. I think it is quite cool jumping on a train that goes all the way through and back to near Cusco. And then we got on a bus for the last little bit.
Yeah. And then back to Cusco again. And obviously, you know,
Cusco, yeah.
We obviously, you know, we stay in the same hotel post and pre trek. So you can leave stuff at the hotel. So you're not taking everything with you on your trek. You're only taking what you need. So you're reunited mm-hmm. with your bag. Couple of days in Cusco at the end, and then it's time, you know, for our groups to, you know, fly back to Lima. And generally, we'll fly direct into Lima Airport and then get our international flight back to the UK again. Is how we normally run our trips. obviously there are options as well. So for us, you know, we offer a Galapagos extension or we offer an Amazon extension on all of our Peru trips. And they're becoming a lot more popular now with people realizing that actually, because when you are at Machu Picchu, you are on the edge of the Amazon rainforest, aren't you? That's where you are at Machu Picchu. So actually then booking an Amazon extension and being able to then go into the jungle and see the Amazon a bit more is a nice way to finish. And like I say, our trips are generally around 11 days. So by adding the extension on, it kind of gives you that 2-week trip for your 2-week holiday in essence. So I think that worked quite well, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it works. It's a really, really nice kind of short and sweet, but I feel like we pack quite a lot in and it doesn't feel rushed. You do get a tour around Lima at the beginning. You get the tours around Cusco, you get the Inca Trail, you get the bus back, you get the train back. So you are hitting off all of those key points. And it's actually almost a shame to go. I mean, I know that we offer a few extensions and those are things that people quite enjoy. If they've got the time, if they've got the annual leave, what they find is that they book the extensions. And then when they get there, they're really glad they did because it's a shame to say goodbye to Peru. It's a really cool country.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's, you know, the one thing that you need to consider if you're just heading to Peru is it does take a while to get to South America on an aeroplane. So if you do have the option of extending it and you know, you might not want to go back there, not that you don't want to go back, but I think if you're there, you go there once and, you know, especially with what we try and cram into our trips, you know, I think you don't necessarily need to go back is what I'm kind of trying to get to the point of. But if you are going all that way, then, you know, maybe to add the Amazon extension on is a good use of that time because, you know, it just means that you are utilizing that flight more and ticking more off there.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, lots of people go for Rainbow Mountain as an extension because you can fit that in the time frame. One of the things, you know, on the one of the advantages of Lara's and Sol Kinté is you've got a little bit more time because, well, I say you've got more time. I think you're slightly more recovered because you spend the night in Aguas Calientes. That's it. You spend the night there. And, you know, then you go up to Machu Picchu. I suppose on the Inca Trail, you've been up quite early. And then the following day, you would go to Rainbow Mountain. But yeah, that's something that a lot of people want to do.
Think, you know, one thing I would say about Rainbow Mountain is I think it is a must to do if you were there. Obviously, you get to go up to 5,100. It's a very short trek, but at the same time, like, it is another early start, and I know that puts a lot of people off, but again, you can just go to sleep in the van on the way there and catch up with that sleep. So it is just a case of getting yourself up in the morning, plonking yourself on the bus, they give you a blanket to put over yourself, and then you can, you know, grab another 2-3 hours sleep whilst you're heading to Rainbow Mountain. So don't be put off by it thinking, oh, it's another early morning. It definitely is worth it. So if you want to, like I say, in our show notes, I'll put links to the Inca Trail trek so you can have a look at it, see if it's a trip that you are interested in. I'll also put a link to all the other trips to Machu Picchu as well, just so you can compare the difference. But if you've got any questions at all on Machu Picchu or any of the treks that we do there, then please do send us a message or contact the office because we would be more than happy to help you get your bucket list tick off for Machu Picchu. And I think it is definitely one that everybody should have on their list at some point just to go and see it. Because I always thought, like, once I've been there once, that would have been it. But kind of every time I go through into Machu Picchu, it is magical. And like, you see it in different lights, in different, you know, it's overcast, it's sunny, it's, you know, it just truly is a magical place and one that you should definitely go in, add to your bucket list and tick it off. So, Jake, I just want to thank you for being on the last episode of season one. I don't think we've left it on a cliffhanger for people to want to come back next week and find out what happened. I mean, maybe we could have an argument now or something, and then like cut it halfway through, and people.
We could do, yeah. I'm sure we could think of something. But yeah, bring it back for season two.
We'll be
bigger
back
and better.
I'll be back for season two. But you know, it's gonna change so much next week in what's gonna happen. Like people will not believe. I mean, I think I might have a band, like some live dancers, just something, just to. You know, make it bigger.
Yeah, you say that it will get last minute and we won't have prepped, and it will be you dancing and me playing the triangle. So yeah,
no, we can use Simo to play the triangle. Don't forget Simo.
We could get Simo to play
in the marching band, so we could use him.
Let's see if Simo's listening.
Yeah, and I'll get him in next week to bang on the triangle. Anyway, thanks ever so much, everyone, for listening. Before you turn off and switch to your next podcast, I would really appreciate it if you could go and just give this podcast a like, subscribe to it. And if you could leave us a lovely 5-star review as well, whichever platform you are listening on, that would be gratefully received. Just go and click that, it's amazing. And that would really help us out as well. So thanks ever so much for listening for this week. And we'll be back for season two next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bucket Lister podcast. Be sure to click follow to be alerted for next week's episode. For more travel inspiration, check us out at www.thebucketlistcompany.co.uk or follow us on socials. See you next time.